You're listening to Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. When Pearl Harbor was attacked by the Japanese in 1941, America was pulled into World War II in a big way. But the military needed, among a lot of other things, pilots. In particular, the U.S. needed pilots who could land and take off from aircraft carriers. But the carriers the U.S. had at the time were desperately needed in the theater. So how do you train the pilots? That is the topic of a new documentary, Heroes on Deck, World War II on Lake Michigan. Joining us now is John Davies. He's the director. This is a part of history not a lot of people know about. I first learned about it because of a small display at the old Meigs Airfield Terminal in Chicago before, you know, Merritt Daly tore it up. How did you first learn about this training?
Well, I was in 1988, I was working at WTTW Chicago, the public television station.
Sure, there. Windows to the World, yeah.
Window to the World Communications, as a young producer. And one night I stopped off for a drink in a bar called the North Side. It was a big hang for people in media. And a guy sitting next to me, after a few hours, looked over at me. He said, "You know, there's 100 World War II planes sitting on the bottom of Lake Michigan, don't you?" And I said, "No, I had no idea." But I couldn't stop thinking about it. And remember, this is before the Internet. So I made a few calls, found a researcher in Washington, D.C. named Polly Pettit, and hired her to go and look in the National Archives. She called me a couple of days later and said, "John, there's a lot of material on this."
Right.
Including a color film. So I ended up making a little doc about it at the time with very few resources, not enough money, underpaid producer guy, and really wasn't a very good documentarian back then. So I made it. It was called Top Guns of 43. I had a chance to remake it a few years ago with a lot more financial resources, and I'm just a better filmmaker now. And we decided to do the ultimate telling of this story and to buy everything they had at the National Archives as opposed to just the one or two things I could afford back in 88.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what was going on. As I mentioned, U.S. carriers were needed in the theater immediately. People got creative and used a couple of Great Lakes passenger steamers. How do you convert a passenger steamer into an aircraft carrier?
Well, remarkably, they did it in just a few months. I mean, there are obviously some great designers working for the U.S. Navy because they figured out how to do it. They found the biggest ships they could because they wanted to come up with the longest flat tops they could put on these things. These two old passenger ships were like luxury ships on the order of the Titanic in terms of the interior. And they had been used by passengers to cruise the Great Lakes in style. And when you look back at the prices, boy, it was cheap back then, $59 for a seven-day cruise. But anyway, the Navy had their structural engineers go in, rip off the upper decks where all the passenger cabins were, and put a gigantic 500-foot-long flat top on it, a runway, basically, and put them out in the middle of Lake Michigan and started training over 15,000 pilots in 2.5 years.
And I saw in one of your releases they called them freshwater flat tops. Why Lake Michigan?
Well, Lake Michigan, they felt, was, as we say in the movie, you were never going to see any Japanese or German U-boats in Lake Michigan. And it was a safety factor, and they realized that they couldn't pull the real carriers out of service, as you said in your opening, to train guys. First of all, ships have to move in a zigzag when they're at war so they don't get shot by submarines. So they couldn't really pull them out of service, and somebody came up with this idea, a former Great Lakes steamship captain, one of the guys who captained one of the two boats that were converted, came up with the idea. He said, "Why not do it in the safety of Lake Michigan? We'll just convert these steamships, and it'll be safe." And all the pilots that I interviewed said, even though it wasn't the ocean, it still gave them a real dose of what it was going to be like to land on a carrier in the middle of a giant body of water.
Tell us the names of those two boats.
When they were steamships, they were the Greater Buffalo and the C&B. And when they were commissioned by the Navy, they became the USS Wolverine and the USS Sable.
How many pilots ended up being trained on Lake Michigan?
Well, the estimates are slightly over 15,000. And the majority of them went to the Pacific Theater, but some did go to the Atlantic. And even a few Canadians and Brits also trained on those ships. And President George Herbert Walker Bush.
Right. Navy pilot got shot down and saved by a sub, as I recall.
Yep.
I read crashes and water landings often led to serious injuries, occasionally death. How many pilots ended up dying? And you said 100 fighter planes ended up in the bottom of Lake Michigan?
Yeah, their estimates are from all the logs and that have been gone through, a little over 100 went in. Actually, more than that went in, but some of them were plucked out of the water right away because it was near the shoreline. You could see them, or they were floating on top, and they had a boat called the Commerce that tooled around following the carriers, hoping to rescue anything that went into the water. And they did rescue a lot, but over 100 went to the bottom, basically of five different types of planes, four of which were used in combat. Of the pilots that went in, they estimate about 8 or 9 guys actually died, which, if you think about it, for any military training exercise with 15,000 people involved, believe it or not, that's a low figure. It's really incredible that they didn't lose more. This is a 7-day-a-week operation, including during winter. And if a guy went into the water in the winter, oh, my God, he only had about 10 minutes before he'd die of exposure.
I understand your documentary not only covers the history, the training, but also the recovery of some of those planes and their restoration. Tell me about that.
Well, that's what triggered me remaking the original movie I had made in 1988. One of the guys who'd edited that movie with me, Harvey Moshman, my partner on the new film, Heroes on Deck, he became a diver in the interim between 88 and 2000, and he started diving on the wrecks with one of the companies that was approved by the U.S. Navy for retrieval. And the only reason the U.S. Navy retrieves these is to place them in museums and airports all over the U.S. So Harvey started calling me up and saying, John, you should consider remaking Top Guns of 43. I've got this great high-def footage I've been shooting. The planes look incredible. They come out of the water. It's a media extravaganza every time one of them breaks the surface. Why don't we remake it? And he really pushed me. And so we did what producers always do. We wrote a 2-page treatment. We made a heck of a sizzle reel. And we went out and started selling. And we got 6 no's. And the number 7 person we went to said yes and wrote the check for the whole thing. And his name is Captain Dave Truitt of the Chicago Marine Heritage Society.
Well, you've got a lot of talented people involved in this project, but I noticed it's narrated by legendary CBS and A&E newsman Bill Curtis.
This film contains rare footage of a U.S. Navy operation just off Chicago's shoreline that changed the course of World War II.
I should note, you might also know Bill Curtis from his role on NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Tell me how important the role of the narrator is in a documentary like this.
Well, it's kind of everything, and I do a doc about once every 5 years. I always like to know who I'm going to hire as the narrator as I'm writing, because I hear their voice in my head then. And also, I'm a heavily scripted documentary guy. I like documentaries with narration. A lot of people don't. They say it's unnatural, but I like docs with narration. So I have to hear the narrator in my head, and I heard Bill Curtis's voice for this, and I actually wrote it even knowing some of his expressions. And so when he said yes, it was like, all right, we got Bill Curtis, and he just knocked it out of the park. To take Bill, he can do a whole one-hour narration track in about 35 minutes. I mean, it's just, he blows through it. But it's so good. He'd always offer to do another take, and we'd be, the first two were great.
Now, when and where can we see Heroes on Deck?
Heroes on Deck is being distributed by American Public Television, and it's on various public TV stations all over the nation, and they're going to have it for 2 years. We always notice a spike in the DVD sales when they run it because they often run it on a military holiday like Memorial Day, Veterans Day, July 4th. That's where it seems to do best for everyone. I mean, it really looks great big. We kind of made it with big in mind, and we retransferred all the old footage to high def. And some of the footage for this movie is, as you can imagine, it's great. This is a great story that hardly anybody really knows about in the U.S. And when you see the film, you're like, wow, it's very hard for me to find stories this good. I lucked out with this one. You know, every now and then you just find that perfect storm of a story where you got the footage, you still got some of the people alive, and I've been fascinated by it since 1988, and I'm still fascinated by it. And when you see these planes sitting on the bottom, you're like, cool.
That's John Davies. He's the director of the new documentary, Heroes on Deck, World War II on Lake Michigan. Thanks for talking with us.
Hey, guys. Thank you.